When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is VRP Rocks, the ultimate classic rock podcast that says that my music is better than yours. Make sure to subscribe to VRP Rocks on your podcast app right now so you don't miss a single episode. They usually come out every Monday and always feature big-name rock stars that found fame in the 60s, 70s, or 80s. But yes, this is a bonus episode today. You lucky thing, you're getting two episodes this week. Now, I spoke with Jolin Turner, former lead singer with Rainbow and Deep Purple. He's worked with Yngwie and Glenn Hughes and so many other incredible artists. The first episode, released on Monday, was Joe telling us his five favourite albums that he's sung on. It's a great episode with some brilliant stories, so please do check it out if you haven't already. Plus, scroll right back to episode 12, right near the beginning of VRP Rocks, where we do a full interview deep dive with Joe as well, so plenty of Jolin Turner content. But this time, whilst I was speaking with him, he also very kindly answered some of your questions. I put the request out on the VRP Rocks social media channels and YouTube and things, and we got some really good ones. So this episode, Joe is answering all those, all the things that you wanted to know. He talks about Ritchie Blackmore, of course he does. He answers whether he wished he'd made a second album with Yngwie, how he felt when he was told Ian Gillan was coming back to Deep Purple after they'd done the Slaves and Masters and started work on the follow-up album. He talks about the decision to reveal all about his alopecia. There's a fun story about being thrown out of a bar for being too drunk with Johnny Rotten, and his thoughts on grunge and much, much more as well. So please enjoy this question and answer chat with Jolin Turner. Joe, are you looking forward to this?
I am, really. Some very good questions here, and I appreciate the guys, the fans, for sending them in to me. It's always nice to reconnect with the guys.
It is, absolutely. So we've got some interesting ones, a mix of eras and things like that as well. So let's get kicked off with one from Fernando. He says, did you ever study vocal technique? Because he loves those awesome high notes you got, especially in Rainbow.
Yes, Fernando, absolutely. When I started out, of course, I'm a guitar player. That's how I started out, as a background vocalist. But when I started to take over lead in my local band, my father looked at me and just said, you know, if you're going to build a house, you got to get a hammer. And I looked at him and said, well, what do you mean? He said, you got to get tools. I said, yeah. He says, you got to get voice lessons. So I said, yeah, you're probably right. He says, you have a natural gift, but you don't have any training. So I started looking around for a voice teacher. And I went through, I think it was about six voice teachers through the years until I finally hooked up with one, Martin Lawrence, on 72nd Street in West End in New York City. that changed my whole way of thinking and performing. He gave me a pyramid method where you think the note before you hit it, the way you structure your diaphragm, the way you take in air, never in your lungs, but only in your diaphragm, and you support the note. And of course, when you're younger, your voice is much higher, so I could hit those notes, but it was all about the support. Now, Marty is not with us anymore. His son, Don, teaches. But I can tell you that he used to warm up Whitney Houston. He used to warm up Enrico Caruso when he would come to Carnegie Hall. I sent Bon Jovi to him. Oh, okay. Because John had called me way back when and said, "Do you know anybody really good?" And I said, "This is the guy, Martin Lawrence." And so many other really popular great vocalists that have gone to Martin. And now Don took his place with the same traditional, you know, sort of pyramid program that I call it the pyramid because the notes get smaller as you go up. You know, it's a whole way of thinking and supporting. So Fernando, yes, absolutely. It's the same with anything, Fernando. I mean, you have a natural ability, but get a hammer if you're going to build a house.
Fantastic stuff. It's quite interesting because when you speak to guitarists, they say you can never master the guitar. You're always learning. So I'm guessing that's the same with vocals. You've got the basis there. You've learned the lessons. You've got the pyramid structure. But you must be always, because your voice changes, you grow, all that sort of stuff. So you must be tweaking and learning different things whenever you record something new or when you go back out on the road.
Absolutely. Look, it's no secret. As we get older, like there are a few anomalies, like my brother Glenn Hughes, who is an anomaly. But at the same time, as you get older, your voice deepens and you don't have the same trajectory and all that. Yeah, you can probably do something in the studio, but you're not going to do it every night on stage. You know, the Brian Johnson trick. I mean, I remember Brian saying to me when I did a Back in Black cover, he said, "Well, you sing it, mate." Because I said, "I can't do that every night. You out of your mind, man. I don't know how you do it." That's just a whole nother way of doing it. So your voice does change, and I'm trying to sort of age gracefully. So I try to keep it in the right keys and sing the right melodies that are going to make me sound good.
Fantastic stuff. Right, let's move on to Patrick Moreau now. He says, "I loved the Slaves and Masters album you did with Deep Purple. I saw the tour with Winger opening up for you. Were you disappointed not to do the follow-up record?"
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you liking the Slaves and Masters. So do I. And I think Richie even mentioned it's one of his favorite Deep Purple albums. Was I disappointed? Yes, in a way, because I knew I was an interim singer. I think Ian Paice had a great statement in the press one time that I read. And he said, you know, Joe was kind of the glue that held Purple together in order to go from this point to this point. And without that album and without Joe being there, Richie would have taken off and done something else. And they never would have had that reunion with Gillan. Plus, I knew that there was something in the works with BMG trying to reunite Gillan for a large sum of money. And money talks, nobody walks. And I understood that. But we did work on the second album, which was The Battle Rages On, for them. And I do have some cassettes with me vocalizing over these tracks and so on. In fact, I did a song that I called Stroke of Midnight that I co-wrote lyrics and melodies with Jim Pitterick from Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
And Blackmore's bluesy track. And they called it One Man's Meat. And the story is that Blackmore would play this on the PA. And I have this good information. He would play this on the PA before a performance because he was pissed at Gillan. So you know how Richie is. He just likes to, eh. And he would play my version of the song. Hysterical, really. But it's typical Blackmore, you know? So... yeah, disappointed, but not really unexpected. You know what I mean? It wasn't, yeah. I didn't expect to. When we started working on that second album, I was like, well, I guess, okay, we'll work on it. But then the call came in and they made the deal with BMG. And I was shown the door and said, look, you know, we're reuniting with Gillan. And
right, let's move on to Paul E. Moz. He says, Odyssey is a fantastic record. In a perfect world, would you have liked to have done another album with Yngwie?
Sure. Look, I don't have a problem with Yngwie. Yngwie is Yngwie, you know, it is what it is. And it got a little bit too much towards the end. I can remember walking around Stockholm in the rain, cursing him because he was just getting overbearing. It was just too much. And at times like those, no, you don't want to do another record. You know, you really don't. You need some distance between you to settle down. Looking back, I guess we could have, you know, if he was a little more reasonable at the time. But to be honest, I think he felt threatened. And maybe he felt he needed to go in a different direction. And if he's going in the direction that he's been going in lately, I don't know. I don't. That's a good decision, simply because he's not a great singer. He's not a great drummer or producer. And, you know, I listen to the records and I go, wow, you know, geez, that's not going to make it. Then I listen to Odyssey and I say, whoa, you know, it's like a super, super piece of work. So I guess sometimes you're your own worst enemy, you know, and in this case, apparently Yngwie is his own worst enemy. But I have no problem with Yngwie to this day. What was done was done. What was said, you know, quote unquote, diary of a madman. So what are you going to do?
Absolutely. And you mentioned spoke about Richie before and Yngwie as well. And obviously they're both known for certain reputations in the business. I mean, how do you go about kind of trying to work with people that are traditionally difficult to work with?
Well, I think I got a lot of experience from Richie. And Richie wasn't so difficult. He's more of a perfectionist than difficult. I mean, hey, he's a prankster. He's very funny. He's got a dark humor, you know, and once you kind of grasp that and you can turn some things against, you know, around at him, he enjoys that. He likes when you play the tricks on him as well.
All right.
So, you know, he could take it as much as dish it out. So he was easy to work with, in my opinion, because he'd always come up to me after listening to a track and say, that's right, right there. You're spot on. You know, like when I did the Street of Dreams track, the vocal, he couldn't play the lead at one point. He went into the studio and I was sitting in the lounge and he comes into the lounge and says, I just can't get it. And I said, what? He goes, I can't play a solo. And I said, what's wrong? He says, your vocal is intimidating. And I said, intimidating? He says, it's a fantastic emotional vocal. Yeah. And I said, so this is what we want. I says, go in and play a fantastic emotional lead, you know? Okay, let's go have a beer. Cracked open a couple of beers, talked about it, lit a few candles, went back in the studio, and he played a solo that I still can sing to this day. Melodic, beautiful composition, perfect for the arrangement. Bam. That's not difficulty. That's just teamwork.
Fantastic stuff. And I've got a question here from G. Varner, who says, how did you first meet Richie Blackmore?
I've always been a big fan, say so to speak, of his guitar playing.
Yeah.
When I'm playing guitar and practicing, I'm always doing a Richie Blackmore lick, okay? I always took him as like my number one guitar player. And then I got a call from him in New York. I was living in New York and looking for a band because my band, Fandango, had broken up off of RCA Records and the whole thing. And here I am just slinging the guitar, walking around trying to get auditions and whatnot. And I got a phone call, and it was Colin Hart, our tour manager. And he says, you want to come and audition? Took a train to Long Island. They picked me up, walked into the studio, spoke about 10 minutes to Richie and Roger. And they said, get in there, get on the mic and start singing. They threw a few tracks at me. They started nodding their head. They pushed the button and said, do you write? I said, oh, yeah. So I picked up my writing bag, which I always bring with me, all my yellow notebooks and things, and started to improvise over different tracks. They liked that. Came in with a beer and said, here, you're in the band if you want it. And that was it. That's how I met him.
Wow.
Just like that.
So how did Colin Hart hear of you? Or how did the band hear of you? Did you support them at any point, or did you just come across your Fandango before? Yeah.
Don Airy and Cozy.
Ah.
They went to a club, apparently, in Long Island. And Fandango was playing one of his last gigs. This is the story I heard through very good sources. And they were impressed. They went back to Richie and said, I don't know, this guy's got something, and blah, blah, blah. So she listened to a few of the records, and Fandango, of course, was nothing like Rainbow. You know, it was much more of an Eagle-y type band, that type of music. But he took a chance on the tone of the voice and the phrasing and things like that. So I went for the audition, and that's how I got in the band, through Cozy and Don. There's a rumor that he actually came out and saw a show too, but he stood in the shadows. I don't know, but that's very possible.
He'd have to stand in the shadows, wouldn't he? Or he'd be recognized. Yeah. Absolutely. I've got one here from Hard Rock Forever 2013. Greetings from Lima, Peru. What did you make of the breakthrough of grunge music in the 90s? And did you like any of those bands? And did you use any grunge influences back then?
Well, okay. Grunge came along, and I'll remember the day. And when everybody's in what they now call classic rock, but everybody's heart just sunk down and just went, oh, no, that's it for us. Because Nirvana came out and several other Seattle bands and so on. And we knew that there was a big shift now, big shift. We could feel it. So it was at first it was really intimidating and disarming, because we knew that something was coming that we had no control over at all. And we'd have to struggle in order to keep up with this particular sound. Now, did I like some of the stuff? Absolutely. I mean, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, so I've heard all kinds of styles of music right up into the present. And they all of these styles contribute to music, to the overall sense of where we're going, especially in rock. And I loved Nirvana. I loved the messaging, what they were doing. I loved the simplicity of what he was doing. I loved his arrogance and his attitude. That's what I loved most about grunge, was the attitude. Their attitude was very punk. And I remember hanging out with Johnny Ladd, okay, you know, on Fifth Avenue, drunk as skunks in the middle of the street, cursing at cars. So I was well familiar with, like, the Sex Pistols and CBGBs and all of that.
When was that? Just to interject quickly, when was that, when were you hanging out with John Lydon?
Oh, geez, I guess it was early 80s or what have you. I remember we got thrown out of the bar. Oh, yeah. He just happened to be in town, I guess, you know, and he was really, back then he was Johnny Lennon, right? Johnny Rotten. And he and I, we hit it off because he was just so arrogant, and I just let it brush off my shoulder, you know, and he says, oh, yeah, that's all right. You're all right, mate, you know, this and that. So we started drinking heavily, and the people around us, and then the management came over and just said, you guys are too much. You're upsetting all the customers. You've got to get out of the bar. And of course, we made a big scene. We ended up in the middle of Fifth Avenue at night, traffic coming both ways, or whatever, one way. And we were just cursing at all the cars. And just after that, we ended up in somebody's apartment, and then it all went blank. It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. So my point was, I'm very familiar with all that. I lived in the East Village, West Village, so I was familiar with the little clubs, you know, Orleans Grocery and everything, where all these bands played. That, you know, and I'd go out to see them. I mean, it was great. The Ramones, come on. You know, I'd always go to a Ramones show. I loved a lot of the grunge, especially when you had your Alice in Chains, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I guess Velvet Revolver was kind of grunge. I mean, it started to change a bit too, grunge, you know. It wasn't just Pearl Jam or what have you. It started to alter, STP and things like that, you know. So there was a lot to choose from there. But did I ever incorporate that grunge? No, I think just the attitude is what you incorporate. You take that angst, you know, and that vibe that they give you, and then you put it into music that way.
Fantastic answer. Loved hearing about the Johnny Rotten thing as well. That was great. I've got one here from Placed Higher Than You, says, Rainbow sound evolved from Ronnie James Dio era. Did you receive any backlash from fans about the way the sound changed?
Any backlash? I received nothing but backlash. No, actually, it was a lot of backlash. But I think that happens when anybody new comes into an established band, that the old guard really resents the new guard. And You know, the old adage that people don't like change. And that's okay, because it was a completely different sound we were going for. Anyway, we were not trying to be comparative in any way. So yes, received a lot of backlash. And I always just kept saying, we are not, you know, the Dio era. We're something else. We're more, yes, are we more commercial? Yes, we are. We want to be. That's what we want. We want to get our songs on the radio. We want to be on the MTV. That's what we want, okay? Ronnie's doing great doing what he does. I love Ronnie. Ronnie, I knew from upstate New York when he was in Elf. Yeah. I mean, you know, all these guys that played from this area, Lou Graham was in Black Sheep and all that. We all played clubs up there. I was in a band called Ezra. So I knew all these guys. And I had no animosities or jealousies or any of that stuff, because it was always a different thing. So backlash came from outside of that. It was the same with Purple. You know, big backlash. Only Gillan can sing these songs. And all I tried to do was do an admirable job of covering these songs like I used to do in my cover band, you know, years ago, emulating my heroes. Whether I sang, whether it was Burn from Coverdale and or Highway Star from Gillan or what have you. It's all I'm trying to do, you know? And it's nice sometimes when you see, you know, the comments like, hey, you know, he's not Gillan and he's not Coverdale and they're not Turner, but he did a good job. And the other two refused to sing each other's songs. So you're going to get to sing that stuff. You're not going to deprive the audience of the song. So I tried to do a good job, and I think I did. But backlash, my friends, yes, yes, yes. Still getting backlash. They never never forget.
But what must be nice, and we've spoken about this in the past when we've spoken, Joe, is the fact that you always had the backing of Richie. Richie was always there, wasn't he, to help you and guide you, and he never let you take too much of the flag.
He really was. In fact, I don't know where it was. I forget. Somewhere in my files, I came over, you know, Blackmore's favorite rainbow singer, and it was me. I mean, wow, you know, I mean, not Ronnie. Come on, I would have thought it was Ronnie. No, because he loves ABBA.
Yes.
He's a melody guy. He's a, you know, he really loves melody and that kind of composition. And so I guess that's how I got to be, quote unquote, a favorite singer of his, because that's what we did and we accomplished what we started out to do, you know? So, and I think that's how I actually got the job in Purple, is because he just said, you know, although I came up and auditioned, but he said, this is the guy. He can write, he can sing, and, you know, he makes a fair presence on stage, and that's it. Yeah. That's who we're going to go with. And I think everybody just acquiesced to that. I said, sure, let's give him a try. And then it was up to me to try to do a good job. And Slaves and Masters is a great record. Whether you can't stand the change or not, it's still a great record. Really is.
Absolutely. Like, let's move on to Blake Thompson now. He says, what made you decide the right time was to go public with the alopecia that you did a couple of years ago?
I guess it's like a fine wine, not before it's time, you know? Everything is timing. And it was an open secret. It wasn't like a big deal, you know. I mean, wearing hair. How many people wear hair out there? Unbelievable. So, and I won't mention any names now that I'm here in the truth. But it was time for me to just say, to hell with all that, you know, to hell with it. You know, I had amazing support and love, of course, from my wife and family and people around me. And they just said, look, you actually look good. They go, a lot of guys can't do this look. He said, but you actually look more badass. So I said, okay, you know, that's a step in the right direction, more badass. People said, well, was it because you did a metal album? And I said, well, no, but it coincided. It kind of came in like an apex, you know, like when things come together, so to speak. It just happened that the timing was right. But it was the right thing to do at the right time, because I felt comfortable. You have to understand, this was not a decision that I made. This was because I was born completely with heads of hair and the whole bit. but I had an autoimmune deficiency. And I won't get into that and why, because it's going to upset some people. But that's what happened. And during the days when everybody was coming up with the Beatles, everybody had to have the hair. So what did I do? I went out and we got the wigs. Boom, boom, boom. And it worked. I mean, there were still some people that didn't understand I wore a wig. So it worked pretty good. But never tried to say no. I mean, you know, and I had people like my brother Glenn defending me and stuff. One time somebody was saying, you know, how about that done with the wig? And Glenn said, Glenn was ready to bust him. You know, he's ready to hit him. I said, Glenn, don't, this guy's an idiot. You know, just let it go. But when you have that kind of love, support, and understanding from people you admire, family, friends, compadres, come on, man. So I had to do it. I just said, you know, it's time. I'm 70 years old. What am I waiting for? You know? And I'm really used to it now. I'm really enjoying it. It's a freedom. It's a truth. You know, in my opinion, in a world of lies, I'm finally living my truth. And I think that was an important personal message for me. You know, if I'm going to speak the truth on Belly of the Beast, I'm going to be the truth. So here we are, people. Okay, like it or not, this is me.
Yeah.
And I think some people still don't have the courage to do that. You know, okay, I understand. I'm not judging them, not at all. But I just felt for me, I had to be an example. And the love and support I got from the fans out there, it was overwhelming. It absolutely made me cry one night. I was just like tearing up, talking to my wife, looking at all these great comments and just saying, she said, see, they love you even more. And I went, you're so right. When you're down to earth, when you're real, they love you even more. And a lot of people said, boy, that's bravery. That's courage. You know, of course, you had a few guys saying, like, what's the big deal? Hey, look, pal, what's the big deal? If it happened to you, it would be a big deal. You know, it's all relative. It's all subjective. But 100%. And it was a big deal for 60 something years. It was a big deal, you know, hiding in plain sight.
Was it a relief to finally let it go and be yourself?
Oh, man. Shower, everything. So easy to get dressed. Boom. You know what I mean? Really cool. I mean, for me, it's like such a burden is lifted.
Yeah.
Psychologically, physically, you know, optically. At first I said, because I had people, for example, when I get hired sometimes for these big private parties, one guy said, you know, my people know you with the hair. Can you put the hair on? Yeah, that'll be another $10,000, but I'll put the hair on. You know, additional. And I would do it because it's costuming.
Yes. Yeah.
Look, everybody out there is costumed. Okay. You know what I mean? I think that was Glenn's. That was one of his remarks. He said, look, it's like Shakespeare said, the world is a stage. We're all actors. Everybody is a costume. Everybody. And that was a costume. So what's the big deal? Look at Kiss.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yep.
They did it right from the beginning.
Yep.
I mean, 100%. Really? I mean, maybe now they'll, you know, chuck it. I don't know. But I'll tell you what, for me, freeing, yes. Validating, yes. Relieving, yes. All of those words, all of the above and more. Yeah. Oh.
Fantastic. And it's nice to hear you mention the words love and family and things like that, because it leads nicely to this next question from Missy the Moo, who says, I see you post videos with you and your beautiful little boy. Has having a child later in life changed you in any way? And what words of wisdom or advice would you like your son to remember as he grows?
Good question, Missy. Thank you for that. First of all, his name is Mateo, and Mateo means gift from God. And he is a gift from God. And I am, and my wife, we are blessed. We are really blessed at this stage of our lives. My wife, first of all, let me explain, is half my age, okay? So it's not like she's an old woman or anything to have a kid. She's much younger than me. And she is just over the moon about the baby. And he's 10 months yesterday. And he's just the joy of my life. So missing. What it does, as a good friend of mine said, having a child prolongs youth. And I absolutely, I feel like my youth has been prolonged. I am on the floor on the baby mat, as we call it, you know, this big mat that's got all his toys on and stuff. And I'm playing with him. And sometimes he's playing over there alone. I'm playing over here. And I'm like a kid again. And I catch myself and say, the innocence sometimes that we've lost, which is really something that I've always tried to keep, because I read the Stoics a lot. And they always say to keep that childlike innocence, no matter how old you are, how mature you are, what experiences you've gone through, you must keep a childlike innocence. The child is father to man. You must keep this innocence. It's a spark inside of you. And that's the spark I get from a tail. It prolongs my youth. It makes me see a dog for the first time like he does. It makes me see a lion at the zoo the first time like he does. You look at the world in a completely different level and different eyesight and perception. You know, and of course, that's all parents. Oh, no, look at the, you know, you do that. But what it does to you is enrich you again and really make you see the actual perception and his reaction to things. And it brings you back into that innocence. It's beautiful. Missy, it's a great question. And as I said, at this stage of my life, I can really enjoy him more. Because I have a daughter and two grandsons and all that. But I was on tour and I was working. I was working to supply everything they needed, you know. And now I can actually enjoy this guy and make a creative, productive human being, you know. And it's my greatest work. It will be. Yeah. Absolutely, Missy.
Well said. Well said, Joe. And just a final question then, back to the music. This is from Philip Bardat, or apologies if I've pronounced that incorrectly. He says, you've worked with so many different bands and musicians over the years. Is there anyone you would have loved to have worked with that you haven't done already?
Tough question. Most of the people I want to work with are no longer here. You know, I've worked with a lot of people. It's true. I've been so blessed in working with so many very different people from, I can't start naming them now. It's amazing. I'm so lucky. But who would I want to work with now? What I really want to do now is maybe reach out into a different style, you know, like maybe work with a new guy that's coming up, this jazz guitarist. You know, do something maybe with jazz, you know, do something more R&B, you know, something like that. Stretch out a little bit that way, a little bit left, a little bit right. So there's a couple of names out there that maybe I'm interested in. But as far as really wanting to work with somebody, all my heroes, a lot of my heroes anyway, are not here any longer. And I just take their inspirations. So I can't really put my finger on that one. I'm very sorry, but the best I can come up with is a different format and a different style. I just got an offer, as a matter of fact, to take a lot of these Rainbow songs and put them in a jazz idiom on piano and guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm contemplating whether maybe I should do this at some jazz clubs. Might be interesting, yeah. You know, to kind of Sinatra my way into I Surrender, you know.
It's pushing boundaries, though, isn't it? It's trying something different and flexing different muscles.
Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, because, you know, you come to a point where you feel you've done it all.
Yeah.
Or you've done it enough. There's nothing new that you're doing, really. I mean, another concert in another town in another hotel room, not new. You know, I mean, I'm still excited by them. Another record, I'm always excited by the new creation, but doesn't have the fizz that it used to have when you first had that immediate passion. Although my passion is great, my passion is also for stretching out and doing something I've never really done before. Belly of the Beast was something I hadn't done before, you know. Going back maybe into my roots of melodic hard rock might be interesting now, because I really haven't put out an album like that in years, really in years. Maybe combining it with a little more style of metal and a little more this inside the AOR. I don't know, making sort of a cake out of it, you know, a different recipe, something, you know? So that's who I'd want to work with. I've yet to find. Any suggestions would be welcome.
Absolutely. And what I like to hear is that it's coming across in your voice. You mentioned that you were staying young with the help of Matteo and things like that, but your enthusiasm is still there. And the thoughts of doing, I might do this, I might do that. It's nice to hear that you're not putting a stop to it. There's no slow down. There's I still have this desire to do something different, to be something different.
I do. I really do. That's my new passion, you know, and I'll tell you another thing. For example, I have a friend who is she's a great novelist. She's written about 14 novels. And she asked me for the last two books to write the foreword. She loves my writing and all this, my lyric. So I wrote the two new forewords to the recent book, and her publishers asked, does this guy write? We love the way he writes. So, and I said, you know, I've not written my book yet.
Yeah.
And that's really something I have to do. So I said, well, first I better attack my book, you know. As far as a story, I have a story in mind as far as a novel, but maybe switch careers and become a writer or something like that. Because the publisher asked, so I said, well, maybe I've got it in there, you know, hey, how do you like this? You know, I don't know. It sparked my interest, I'll tell you that.
You know, everyone's got a book in them, that's the saying.
Yeah, well, you know, can always sing on the side.
Sinatra, I surrender, and then write your book. That's all you have to do.
Yeah. You know, I'm very lucky and blessed to be able to do all that, honestly. Yeah. You know, because according to my wonderful wife, who thinks I can do everything, and she's not wrong, in many ways I can, you know, do a lot of things. But we don't have the time to do all those things. We have one life to live, and we have to pick and choose what we're going to do in order to be really great at it, you know? Otherwise, you're a jack of all trades and master of none. But, you know, hey, you could be a comedian, I'll tell you what, and you could be this and you could be that. Where am I gonna get the time for all this? You know, where do you find that? And here I am at the golden years of my life. So I really want to enjoy my life.
Yes.
Now, I've worked hard to come to this point. I want to enjoy my new son, the rest of my family, and whatever life throws at me, you know, in the future. So, you know, and then sometimes when I'm not really working or sweating here in this office, she's like, you're not doing anything, you know, and I'm like, I'm thinking. I'm thinking about doing something.
Yeah. I love that. That's it. Do what makes you happy, Joe. That's all you can do. Do what makes you happy at this stage.
Absolutely. You know what? Exactly. That's what else is there in life? Try to find your niche, find something you can grab hold of, and hang on.
That is it.
You know, life's too short. When you get my age, you start to realize it. Youth is wasted on the young.
A great way to end this interview. Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you for this last hour and a half by the looks of things. Thank you so much for your time. I've loved hearing all your stories as usual, and best of luck. And I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next, whether it is a Sinatra Die Surrender or a novel or jazz, or I don't know. It's always exciting to see what comes next.
Paul, thank you so much. It's always such a pleasure talking to you. Really. I really enjoy your company. So I hope to do it again sometime. All the best to you and yours. Ciao.
There you go, Joe Lynn Turner answering your questions. Thank you to everyone who sent them in. If you haven't already, please do go back and check out Monday's episode with Joe revealing his five favourite albums that he sung on, and another full interview that I did with him a few years ago that can be found on episode 12 of VRP Rocks. Right, I'll be back on Monday with another big interview show. So until then, take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.